Okay, welcome back. Jeffrey Sachs, Web Yeshiva, Masechet Ta'anit. We are on Daf Yud Zayin Omid Bet, 17b, two lines before the end of the skinny lines, as they used to say. We're a little short-handed tonight, it seems. A few people have told me that they had conflicts and whatnot. So we'll learn for a little while, just so that we should be getting back to the groove. Acharei Achagim. And we are closing in on the end of the second perek of Masechet Ta'anit. The Gemara here references the Mishnah that had mentioned Megillat Ta'anit. Megillat Ta'anit is an interesting work its exact history and authorship and other things is not completely understood, but this text, which was known to Chazal, in other words, in the times of the, it's a text that predates the redaction of the Mishnah, it lists a whole group of different holidays and special days and celebratory days, many of which are forgotten to us, meaning they're not celebrated as festivals until this day. And it lists a couple dozen, I don't know, like three dozen different things where miracles happened, or the Jewish people in certain places were redeemed from oppression or from disaster, and these were celebrated as local or universal festival days. You know, these are not the festivals that we know. Of course, we know about the Purim, we know about Chanukah, but these were other things that happened in Jewish history that occurred. Like presumably, like in our day. If Megillat Ta'anit were being written today, it would include Hei Iyar, it would include Yom Yerushalayim, it would include the modern days in which wonderful, miraculous things happened to the Jewish people. On some of those days, in which there were these kinds of minor celebrations, there were additional prohibitions against fasting and against mourning. It's maybe partially ironic that the text is called Megillat Ta'anit. First of all, it's not a Megillah in the sense of Megillat Esther or Megillat Shir HaShirim or Megillat Kohelet, but it was a scroll, it was a text. And to call it Ta'anit overlooks the actual festive nature of the primarily festive nature of the text. But since it lists times when it's forbidden to fast, you know, there are certain festival days. Like right now, for example, it's Rosh Chodesh. We just started here with sunset. We started 2 days of Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. It's generally prohibited to fast on Rosh Chodesh, on Chanukah, on Purim, on other happy days, because it goes against that happy nature of the day. So on the days that are listed in Megillat Ta'anit as these festival days, so on those days, mourning, public mourning, like for example, delivering eulogies are forbidden, and fasting is forbidden on all of them. And our Gemara deals with the nature of these prohibitions to fast and when those prohibitions apply and etc. People interested in Megillat Ta'anit, there is, of course, a significant amount of scholarship written on Megillat Ta'anit. You can find it, through the Google machine, assuming Google machine is still working. You know, if Facebook went down, who knows, it'll soon be the apocalypse and we'll go back to being zombies. So, Kol HaKatub Megillat Ta'anit, Delo LeMispad LeFanav, Asur LeAcharav, Whenever Megillat Ta'anit says that you're not allowed to deliver a hesped, you're not allowed to deliver a eulogy on a certain festive day, it's also forbidden to fast on the day before, but you're allowed to fast on the day following. Right? In other words, we know, for example, today, well, today's not a good example since we haven't been saying Tachanun all of this, all of these weeks since Sukkot began, or since Yom Kippur, actually. But normally speaking, on a regular Rosh Chodesh, we would not have said Tachanun at Mincha this afternoon. Because we have this idea, Tachanun is a kind of a somber prayer, and it's not compatible with festive days, and therefore gets skipped on all types of different occurrences. If you're a Litvak, you don't like to skip Tachanun. If you're a Chosid, you always have an opportunity to skip Tachanun. There's some Hasidic shtibbles where they never say Tachanun, because on any given day it's somebody's yahrzeit, or it's some event, or the Rebbe got out of prison, or the Rebbe went into prison, or who knows what. But the idea that the day before a festive day is already, you know, half festive, is an idea that's familiar to us. So on the days that are listed in Megillat Tanit, those dates that are festive, not only are those days festive, but the day before is festive as well, and you can't fast on the day before. Although you can, the Mishnah says you can fast on the following day. So now the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan. This is an actual quote from the Megillat Ta'anit. That is, the Megillat Ta'anit, the Chazal refer to Megillat Ta'anit in the same language it refers to the Tanaim. Right? Tanu Rabbanan usually means, here's a Braita. Right? So it's treating the Megillat Ta'anit as if it's a collection of Braitot. Ilein yomya delo lehitana bahun. On these days, it's in a particular, the Megillat Ta'anit is written in a particular register of Aramaic. So, ilein yomya delo lehitana bahun. On these days, when you're not allowed to fast, umiktsat hon delo lemispad bahun. And on certain of those days, you're also not allowed to deliver eulogies. So what are those days? Mereish Yarcha Denisan V'ad Tmanya Bey. From Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the month of Purim, until the 8th of Nisan, you're not allowed. What?
The month of Pesach.
What did I say?
Purim.
Oh, no, I meant Pesach, obviously. I was testing you, Tzvi, to see if you're awake.
I just wanted to show you that I'm awake.
Excellent. Now you can go to sleep. So from the month in that month of Nisan, which is the month, now we know, of course, according to our practice, the whole month is treated as a kind of festive month. But here we're talking about something else. So in this 8-day period from Rosh Chodesh Nisan until the 8th of Nisan, that's a kind of festive period. And you can't, and we celebrate it. Why? Itukam tmida, because the korban tamid was established, was mitukan, right? Either it was established, or it was instituted, or it was repaired. But we're not talking about the establishment of the daily sacrifice as described in the Torah. We're talking about a different historical case, which we'll explain momentarily. Delole misbadbo. On those days, on those 8 days in which the Korban Tamid was established, you can't deliver eulogies. Mitmanya be ad sof moada, itutav chaga de shvuaya. And from the 8th until the end of Pesach, those were the days in which Shavuot was instituted or re-established. What does that mean, Shavuot was re-established? Also we'll explain. Delo lemispadban. So on those days we don't eulogize because of the repair to Shavuot. So the first 8 days of the month, The first 8 days of the month, the Korban Tomid, the daily sacrifice, was fixed. And from the period after that until the end of Pesach, Shavuot was fixed. So what is this talking about? This is talking about the heretical movements, that took place in the times of Bayit Sheni, the Tzdukim and the Baitusim, these Jewish sects that rejected the interpretive tradition of the Torah Shebaal Peh. The Korban Tamid, according to our tradition, according to the Prushim, according to the rabbinic law, the Korban Tamid, the daily sacrifice in the morning and the afternoon, was brought from communal funds. What are communal funds? Every Jew had to give the chatzi shekel, the half shekel worth, you know, in the weeks leading up to Purim. We have the special parashiyot, and one of those parashiyot is Parashat Shkalim, where we read about the chatzi shekel from Parashat Kitisa. And on Purim itself, or at Erev Purim, we have a custom of reenacting this giving of a chatzi shekel or three chatzai shekel. There's different minhagim about how to do that, but that's a minhag. It's not the real thing, of course, because we don't have korbanot today. But that kind of head tax on each person went into the communal pot, and with that communal pot, the korbanot, the daily sacrifices, were funded. And that's how each and every individual Jew was part and party to the daily sacrifice. In other words, if everybody is responsible for the daily sacrifice, right? So it's not that every single person brings a sacrifice every day. One sacrifice is brought in the morning and another sacrifice in the afternoon on behalf of the entirety of the collective Jewish people. How do I participate in it? Through my payment of the chatzi shekel, right? My chatzi shekel buys me a share in the Korban Tamid all year long. The Tzdukim believed that an individual could donate the Korban Tamid. You know, like Kiddush. Kiddush, you go to shul, there's a little herring, there's a little schnapps, there's a little kugel, right? It's a communal meal, but it's very often financed by one individual. This week, Tzvi Meisel is sponsoring the Kiddush, we'll say, in memory of this person or in honor of that person, or because he was Chassan Torah, Chassan Bereishis, or whatever it was. If only he had been, it would be a nice Kiddush. It's an individual donates it, and it's a communal meal. That's not how the Korban Tamid works. However, the Tzdukim thought that that's exactly how it could be. That everybody gives the Chatzi Shekel, but on any given day, you'd read in the newspaper of the Beit HaMikdash, or if the Beit HaMikdash had Twitter or Facebook, they would have said, today's Korban Tamid is sponsored by the Blaukop family, in honor of whatever it is. Right? Chazal said, no, you can't do it that way. An individual cannot offer the communal sacrifices. The communal sacrifices have to be brought from the communal funds. So this was a very serious problem throughout a certain period, particularly during the Tkufat Hashmonaim, when the Kohen Gadol was not exactly the figure that we would have wanted, and rabbinic authority was challenged, and when that halachic challenge was put down, and we got rid of this mistaken manner of taking the Korban Tamid, and we reinstituted the integrity of the halacha that the Korban Tamid, the communal sacrifices, have to come from communal funds. That's what happened during that period of those 8 days. It happened in Nisan. I don't think we know the specific year, but we know the days, and that's why those 8 days are festive, and that's why you can't deliver eulogies on those 8 days. And what about Shavuos? What does it mean we established Shavuos in in Nisan. Shavuos is in Sivan. No, no, you remember that there was also an attack on the date of Shavuot. Shavuot being the only holiday that doesn't have a set date in the Torah. Because of the Sfirat HaOmer, we know when Shavuot is by counting from Mimocharat HaShabbat, from the day after the first day of Pesach. On the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach, we count Hayom Yom, one day, first day of the Omer. And then you do 49 days, and on the 50th is Chag HaShavuot. But the opponents of the Torah Sheba'al Peh said, no, what's Mimocharat HaShabbat? According to the rabbinic interpretation, Usfartem Lachem Miyom HaRishon, Usfartem Lachem Mimocharat HaShabbat, means Shabbat, doesn't mean Shabbat Saturday. Shabbat means the day when you decease from Melacha on the first day of Pesach. But the Stukim thought that it was Shabbat. It was the Shabbat of Chol HaMoed. So that Shavuot always came out Mimocharat HaShabbat on a Saturday night, Sunday. And that, of course, changed the date of when Shavuot would be in any given year. So when this threat to the integrity of the Torah Sheba'al Peh was put down, that was in this period from the 9th of Nisan until the end of Pesach, and that's why that period became a festive time in which we do not deliver eulogies. According to our tradition, we don't deliver eulogies at all during the month of Nisan. Right? We don't say Tachanun at all during the month of Nisan. And fasting should be avoided during the month of Nisan, because the whole month, because of the presence of the redemption of from Egypt, celebrated on Pesach in the middle, the whole month takes on that character. But that's according to our tradition. I should say parenthetically, this idea that you don't deliver eulogies on certain days, on Rosh Chodesh, for example. So you're all aware that, this is a halakha that's kind of observed in the breach. If you ever go to a funeral on Chol HaMoed or on Rosh Chodesh, when you're not supposed to deliver eulogies, so someone, a family member, the rabbi, whomever it is, will get up and say, since today is Rosh Chodesh, we don't deliver eulogies. Instead, I'm going to say a few words about the deceased. And then you say whatever it is. I mean, I guess you should try to dial it back a little bit. The purpose of eulogy is really to cause the audience to be moved to tears. So maybe on Rosh Chodesh or on Chol HaMoed, you shouldn't do that. I was at a funeral on Chol HaMoed Sukkot, and they had fewer eulogies than they might have had otherwise for this person. Her two sons spoke, and they really both spoke quite briefly and perhaps a little bit more dryly than they would have under normal circumstances. And then a grandson spoke, but he really did it, the way you imagine it would have been done. But I guess one can forgive a grandson for feeling that way about his grandmother. When my grandmother passed away, that's what I did. I said, it's Rosh Chodesh, it's the first day of the Jewish month, so our custom is that we don't deliver eulogies. I assure you, I don't think there was anyone in the audience that had any idea what I was talking about. But then by saying that, I felt I had fulfilled my obligation to observe the halakha in the breach. So the Gemara goes on and says, Omar Mar. So Meresh Yarcha Denisan Atmana Bey, we observe these days as festive, and we don't deliver eulogies from the first of Nisan until the eighth of the month. because of itokam tamida, because of the reestablishment of the daily sacrifice, delola mispit. Lama li miresh yarcha. So now the Gemara is going to dissect the passage from Megillat Ta'anit, you know, Talmudically. Why does Megillat Ta'anit have to say you can't do it from Rosh Chodesh? Anyway, we know that we don't deliver eulogies on Rosh Chodesh. Right? Lema mitrei benisin. In other words, the Megillat Ta'anit only needed to say you don't need to, you're not allowed to give a eulogy from the second of Nisan. On the first of Nisan, it's Rosh Chodesh, and in all cases, you're not allowed to give a hesped. Rosh Chodesh gufe yom tov hu da'avaser. Rosh Chodesh in and of itself is a holiday on which you're not allowed to give a hesped. So Omar Rav, lo nitzricha elo le'asur yom shel fanav. No. It's only necessary to tell you. In other words, Taka, you're right. Megillat Ta'anit doesn't need to tell you you can't deliver a eulogy on the first of Nisan, because all Rosh Chodesh, you can't deliver a eulogy. Normally speaking, however, you are allowed to eulogize on Erev Rosh Chodesh. But on Erev Rosh Chodesh Nisan, you're not allowed to eulogize. Not because it's Erev Rosh Chodesh, but because Rosh Chodesh Nisan is a double whammy. It's Rosh Chodesh, like any other, but it's also the first of this eight-day celebration of the restoration of the Korban Talmud. Because it's the celebration of the restoration of the Korban Talmud, then Erev, not Erev Rosh Chodesh, but Erev, this eight-day period, becomes a day on which you don't eulogize. It just so happens that Erev, that eight-day period, is Erev Rosh Chodesh. But it's not because of Rosh Chodesh that we don't eulogize. It's because of the eighth day celebration of the restoration of the Talmud. So you see, I mean, it's very classically Talmudic hair splitting, right? Why does the Megillat Ta'anit need to tell us from Rosh Chodesh? Anyway, Rosh Chodesh. No, there's a reason. The Gemara is always motivated, whether it's analyzing a Mishnah or a Braita or even this passage in the Megillat Ta'anit. It's always motivated by this assumption that there's no purpose in stating the obvious. Let's not waste ink. Right? So if the obvious is stated, or if the redundant is stated, there must be a hidden reason. And what's the hidden reason? The hidden reason is to teach you the halacha that in this case, on Erev Rosh Chodesh, you can't give a hesped. You can't give a hesped either. So then the Gemara says, "Me'manav shach v'shel fanav nami," but the day before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, you also can't give. Why? Tefak le dahave le yom shelifnei Rosh Chodesh. So wait a second. What we just said was not completely true. The day before Rosh Chodesh, you're also not supposed to eulogize. So attacka really is redundant. So why don't you say, why didn't it say that? Because Rosh Chodesh dioraitahu, v'dioraita lo bo'i chizuk. Rosh Chodesh is a biblically instituted festive day. Right? The Torah establishes the idea that Rosh Chodesh is festive. That it's not a yontif in the sense that there's no prohibition of doing melacha, of the forbidden labors, but it's a special day. You bring a korban. You bring a korban musaf on that day. But since it's dioraita, you don't need, it's kind of like, it's somewhat ironic, because we are very familiar with the idea of, in many cases, building a fence around the Torah. Va'asu sayag le'Torah, says the Mishnah at the beginning of Pirkei Avot. Right? That Chazal were concerned about preserving certain mitzvot, and therefore they built fences around them. You're not allowed to have meat and milk, but you're also not allowed to have poultry and milk, on a rabbinic phrase. But here's the opposite. Here the assumption is that something which is biblical in origin, like Rosh Chodesh, we don't need to go out of our way to remind people. People will know that. But something which is of rabbinic, and here a kind of rabbinic custom, not exactly a rabbinic mitzvah, the eight-day celebration of the reinstitution of the Talmud, that needs a little chizuk, that needs a little bit to be reinforced, and therefore we state what otherwise is obvious. We would have known anyway that the day before Rosh Chodesh you don't give eulogies. So why do we have to state it here explicitly? Because of the fact that we need to strengthen it a little bit. Titania, I lost the place. Here, Titania, you see where we are? Titania, as the Brita states, Hayamim ha'elu haktuvim b'megilat ta'anit lifnehem vachurehem asurim. Right, both on the festive days in Megillat Ta'anit, right, you can't fast neither before nor after. Shabbatot v'yamim tovim hein asurim. But wait a second, on a happy day, on a happy festive day, because something happened to the Jewish people, you're not allowed to fast on the day before, and you're not allowed to fast on the day after. Shabbos and Yom Tov, aren't those festive days? Certainly. They're festive days biblically ordained. They're certainly more festive than these days which are mostly forgotten to us in Megillat Ta'anit. Why are you allowed to fast on Fridays and Sundays? You should never be allowed to fast on Friday and Sunday because it's the day before and the day after a happy day. But you are allowed. As a matter of fact, you know, some people have a custom dafka to fast on Fridays. And there are people that have a custom dafka to fast on Erev Yom Tov. Right? We have a fast on Erev Yom Tov. We get out of it. We get out of the Ta'anit Bechorot on Erev Pesach by making a Siyum or whatever there is. But there is a fast on Erev Pesach, at least, you know, on paper, even though we get around it. Right? Once I fasted on Erev Pesach. It's not recommended. Because by the time you get to the meal at the Leil HaSeder, it's quite late and you get cranky. You have to drink those two cups of wine before you get there on an empty stomach. It's not recommended. But there are people that are accustomed to fast on every Erev Yom Tov, except, of course, not Erev Yom Kippur, right? So that you'll be able to eat with a hearty appetite, right? So you'll be able to eat in the sukkah, where eating is a particular mitzvah, right, with a hearty appetite. So why shouldn't it be forbidden to eat? Why shouldn't it be forbidden to fast on Erev Shabbos and Motzei Shabbos, on Erev Yom Tov and Motzei Yom Tov? So the Gemara says, Uma hefresh ben zeh lazeh. What's the difference between the holidays of Megillat Ta'anit and Shabbos and Yom Tov? Halalu divrei Torah. Shabbos and Yom Tov, that's Dioraita, that's biblically ordained. V'divrei Torah ein srichin chizuk. We don't need to. Shabbos and Yom Tov, they've got enough going for themselves on their own. We're not afraid people are going to be negligent about celebrating on them, right? So we don't have to institute a prohibition of fasting before or after. We don't need to create these bookmarks or create this fence around it. But the holidays in Megillat Ta'anit, halalu, these, the ones in Divrei Ta'anit, that's Divrei Sofrim. Those are merely rabbinic. And therefore, we're a little concerned that people won't take them as seriously. V'divrei Sofrim, tzrichim chizuk. They need a little strengthening. They need to be bolstered up. And therefore, we tell people, don't even fast neither on the day before nor on the day after. Okay. We learned for a half hour. Since we're shorthanded, I think we'll call it a night here. And we'll continue next week, hopefully with a full complement of our colleagues joining us back here online. I hope everybody had a good Yontif. I hope you ate enough and all those things you're supposed
Thank
to
you
do.
Very much. That was a very good half hour. Thank you.
Okay. Laila Tov.